Welcome to Conversations on Big Data, a series of discussions with agency leaders about the power of analytics to enhance how federal agencies meet their mission. In this podcast, we'll be discussing the use of data analytics at the Internal Revenue Service.
Welcome. I'm Laura Shane, Vice President for Research and Communications at the Partnership for Public Service and one of your hosts for today's podcast. I'm sharing that duty with Brian Moreau, Associate Partner of Strategy and Analytics at IBM. Today, we have the privilege of speaking with Dean Silverman, Senior Advisor to the Commissioner, Office of Compliance Analytics at the Internal Revenue Service. So, Dean, what projects are you working on at the moment?
There are numerous, but they're primarily in three different areas. The first is reducing refund fraud and improper payments, primarily in the areas of identity theft fraud and the earned income tax credit. And there's really a whole array of topics and projects that go inside each of these areas, since each of these are very large, complex, and often require a multi-pronged approach beyond just pure modeling. The second area is really tax gap and reducing the tax gap, which is the difference between taxes owed and taxes paid, with the critical focus being on small business compliance, which is the largest portion, or about a third of the tax gap. The tax gap itself is several hundred billion dollars per year. And that area is proving a very good venue to test some new approaches to generating increased taxpayer compliance while at the same time minimizing taxpayer burden. The third area is what we would call core compliance enhancements, just stuff that we do every day, whether it's modeling and testing new case-case classification or selection rules, or investing in new methods to encourage voluntary compliance, which in the end of the day is the best way to get compliance.
And you were brought into the IRS specifically by the commissioner to do this type of advanced analytics work. Why was that needed?
The IRS has always had and used data analytics quite well. And the prior commissioner thought we needed to take it to the next level, and specifically to tie analytics to strategy, not just to operations or research, and to innovate. I think all agencies are being asked to focus on more effective and more valuable use of data analytics, largely because there's a ton of data out there and an awareness now that data analytics can materially help improve decision-making if we make better use of it. The analytics revolution can reshape government effectiveness perhaps better than any other investment.
Why is it so important to use data analytics?
Leaders are always better off having data and an increased understanding of how things work and how they might work more effectively, both to make decisions and to define the problem. Einstein once sort of said if he was given 60 minutes to solve a problem, he'd spend 50 minutes thinking about it and framing the problem, and then 10 minutes solving it.
One project you undertook was to look at ways to reduce improper payments due to tax fraud or identity theft. How did you approach that, and what was the result?
There are two separate topics. Identity theft is not technically an improper payment. Let's just talk about improper payments for a moment. The biggest and most complex area and almost an intractable problem has been the earned income tax credit. And one way of attacking that, rather than continuing to pound your head against the wall of doing taxpayer audits, is to take what I would call a wholesale approach versus a retail approach. And the wholesale approach says, let's look at the tax preparers and let's try to influence their behavior in terms of filing false returns. We've had a three-year pilot program now going on. And over those 3 years, we've saved about $2 billion of improper payments.
How has the IRS moved ahead on increasing tax return accuracy overall?
I'd say very successfully, but there's always more to do. It's important, I think, to distinguish between how much noncompliance in the tax area is error, how much crosses over to willful noncompliance in one form or another, maybe because we don't have enough cops on the beat, maybe because mild cheating has become a social norm. And how much is actually organized fraud? And ID theft is in fact that. The requirements for treating each of these behaviors is quite different, and we are moving forward on all fronts. And one way that crosses all three is to move more of our efforts towards detection and intervention earlier in the process. In terms of accuracy, I think that's relatively straightforward. Having information reports always helps. The new 1099-K on small business receipts is an example of that. But regarding fraud, which is more pernicious and has a bigger problem in terms of impacting government revenues, is the fact that we need to be adaptive and invest in the latest tools. It's a bit like an arms race. We should better leverage our processes. We may have to rejigger internal policies, for example, how long a time a refund is held before we send it out so we can better investigate it, or requesting added authority where it's needed. It's not always about analytics and finding the bad guys. It can be analytics pointing the way to other solutions as well.
How have you refined or improved your analytics processes?
Any analytics organization, in terms of process, needs to supplement a purely analytics focus with a focus on outcomes. The analytics process has to be firmly rooted in this particular precept. And that means the analytic process in the organization has to be tethered in practice, if not organizationally, to core operational leadership, either helping give new or realigned shape to their priorities or supporting these priorities in ways that will accelerate results. We have increased the data we collect, but data is like a natural resource. Its value is in the end state after you've extracted it, right? After you process it and made it valuable to the customer.
What have you learned from looking at fraud that can be used in additional areas of the IRS?
We're increasingly focused on what deters people from undesirable behavior. So, for example, on the earned income tax credit, a large percentage of the returns, as I said, were prepared by paid preparers. Well, why is it that they do that? Are they in a given area where they think it's acceptable? Do they not know the rules? Are they dealing with people who feel entitled? Do the people then move to other preparers if the preparers don't give them their way? So we're looking for ways to impact behavior. And those ways can be as simple as you send a letter sort of saying, we don't think your returns are terribly compliant, and we're going to be looking at you over the coming filing season. Surprise, surprise, it actually has a major impact. But it doesn't have a major impact on everybody. So then the question becomes analytically, who does it affect? Is a phone call more effective? Is an email more effective? If you don't improve, should we follow up with a more aggressive treatment? Yes, no. These questions are like the Russian doll. They keep opening and opening. And so you're going to have to answer these questions over time. The overall major objective to stopping fraud is to getting people who you can influence from committing it.
Phone calls from the IRS are fairly effective.
Not particularly.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Your office started with mostly outsiders who worked with the agency's business divisions to combine some programs. What made that model effective?
We partner hand in glove with our operating divisions, as well as with IT, as necessary, in agreeing on what the problem is, solving it, redirecting processes or technology solutions to empower effective implementation, then measuring the results. We, in effect, seek to embed our approach into the business of our customers from beginning to end. We frame, we assess, we implement, we repeat. Typically, I think in government, there's a schism or divide between research or analysis and operations. Requests get thrown over the wall, analytic output gets thrown back over the wall, and voila, that's the dance. And that has to change. Now, my being an outsider at the outset perhaps gave me a leg up, because the embedded partner model is the model I've been championing and used my entire career.
What were some of the barriers you encountered along the way?
There's always the barrier of, is the outsider going to understand my business? Is the outsider going to tell me what to do? Is the outsider going to be here, or can I outlast the outsider? But it's certainly not something that is unexpected. It can be overcome by building trust. It can also be overcome, most importantly, by creating results. You create results, people want your services.
How do you measure success for your office?
We measure success by outcome.
And the outcome being what you agreed
improved,
on?
Improved performance, whatever that metric's going to be. Sometimes it's a new capability that we're able to execute. So, for example, in the return preparer test we talked about earlier on EITC, the first year's test was really about, can we actually do it? Can we intervene during filing season? In the second year's, it was like, which interventions work for whom? How many dollars could we prevent? So we define it in advance. We look at the results, and we come up with new metrics if we have to. Voluntary compliance is a classic one. No, very, very hard to measure, but you really need to measure it, because ultimately that's the goal of our tax system.
You report directly to the commissioner. Do you think that has helped you achieve your goals and help drive change?
Absolutely critically important. There are a number of reasons. It comes down to what's your objective. If your objective is to create good analysis, you don't need to report to anybody. You can just go off and do it and then hand it to somebody. But if the objective is to create an outcome that requires change or innovation, you need somebody who is going to be sponsoring that change at the top of an organization. It is that simple. And in government, it's even more important.
What's something that you've done in your 3 years there that you're most proud of?
I think we've come a long way, especially given the environment we've operated under the last year. It hasn't really distracted us from our core mission. So I'm pretty proud of the results. I'm really proud of the ability of our organization and our partners to coalesce into the ability to work these problems together. It takes courage on everybody's part to sort of say we're going to work as a team when, in fact, you're approaching problems from very different vantage points. And the power is in the team. The power is in the collaboration. The power is in the partnership. And I'm very proud of my team. I think they do a great job.
This has been a conversation with Dean Silverman, Senior Advisor to the Commissioner, Office of Compliance Analytics at the IRS. I'm Brian Murrow from IBM, here with Laura Shane from the Partnership for Public Service, and we hope you return for the next two podcasts in this series with Dean Silverman on using data for decision-making at the IRS.
These podcasts are presented by the Partnership for Public Service and the IBM Center for the Business of Government. To listen to conversations with other agency leaders, visit ourpublicservice.org/bigdata.